this either is, has been, or will be a Krypton Radio production as soon as we can get the TARDIS working properly to figure out which one it is!
Mad Woman! Hey, where are you? We gotta get going here! Okay, come on.
Time to record, come on.
Oh, okay, good, good. Yeah. Can't wait to get started.
Okay, you said you had a special guest. Where is he?
What special guest?
The one you were talking about on the phone the other day.
Yeah, you had a special guest. Where is he?
We haven't talked on the phone. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're not.
You were talking to somebody, then you called us on the phone and saying he was going to be a good guest.
When was this?
Ah! What the hell is that thing doing in here?
What the heck is what?
That!
Behind you!
There's nothing behind me.
Behind her? Ah! What the hell is that thing doing here?
What the heck? What's what? What are you guys talking about?
Tell us, what are you talking about?
I don't know. We're talking about her special guest. Where is he?
I don't know anything about special guests. I didn't bring in... Okay, wait, what's this thing over here? Who left this... That looks like an iDrive.
Oh, I was playing around with this thing here. You know, it just kind of... I wanted to see if it fit. The Corsair got it for me. Oh, now I know what's going on.
What?
Look. Okay, you guys, turn around. Look where I'm pointing.
What?
What's this?
Mark the Corsair. Fantastic bloke. He had that snake as a tattoo in every regeneration. Didn't feel like himself unless he had the tattoo or herself a couple of times. Ooh, she was a bad girl.
And so are we.
Dazed and confused as usual.
And of course, it wouldn't be us if we weren't dazed and confused. Who are we? We are the Corsair's Closet. I am the Mad Woman with the box. She is the Time Siren. He is the NASA nerd, a.k.a. the awful husband, adult fan of Lego.
And that, awful, horrid thing in the corner is a priest? Where did that come from?
I know. This is one of many things we have to discuss
These
today.
Things are priests? WTF, dude?
I know. Well, see, that's the reason I brought it. Now that we found all three of the iDrives, we can finally have the episode.
Ugh, just give me a cannon raid. Well, I'd rather use that.
He's asking me to confess. Confess what?
Well, no, I brought the Silent in because of the fact that we're going to discuss the Time of the Doctor today, because we've seen it, Matt Smith's last episode. Oh, okay. And,
that was a minor breakdown, by the way, folks.
Yeah, yes. I'm still wrestling. It hurts so much.
It's her first regeneration.
It is.
It'll hurt until Capaldi really gets in gear and makes her forget.
Yeah, so, the Silent's here because we actually have some conflicting opinions about the episode, and I figured that this way we have the Silent in here, we can speak our minds, and then all we have to do at the end of the episode is take out our iDrives, we won't remember it, and that way, if things get super heated, we won't have any bad blood in the room, you know?
And that way, if people come for us with torches and pitchforks, we won't understand why. I'm not sure I like that idea.
By the way, a radio guest who remains silent really isn't a good radio guest.
Well, he talks occasionally.
Well, he makes those awful cockroach noises, but
other
than
that. Yeah, but no, seriously, he's a really nice guy. We've spoken briefly. His name is Steve. And he's actually a really good bingo player.
Steve the Silent?
Steve the Silent. And he's great at bingo. And Steve, remind me to give you some of those chocolate truffles we were talking about yesterday.
Okay, yeah, right. Okay, well, let's just keep talking because the sound of his voice creeps me out.
Okay. Yeah, Del Roar, Steve. Thank you so much. Okay.
Yeah.
So, now, Time of the Doctor. We've all seen it, and we'll preface by saying, if you have not seen the episode yet... Where have you been? What are you doing?
And get out of here right now.
What kind of fan are you?
Yeah, go out, find a link, watch the episode, hit pause, do that thing, then come back to us, and we can have a massive discussion.
Yeah, get out of here because we want to talk. Go on, shoot, go away.
And spoiler buffer is complete.
Now.
Okay. Now we can talk about it. So, what's everybody's consensus of the episode?
Well, I liked it. I enjoyed
it. I liked it on the whole.
I think it was a good send-off.
Yeah, it was, we saw a couple of new different things, and, at first I kind of thought maybe it was rushed when there was the head of the papal mainframe was giving the overview of things, and as time passed, this and this happened, but no, it seemed okay. The second time I saw it, I was okay with it, so... Yeah, I kind of liked it.
Yeah, I didn't feel that was rushed because there was really nothing more to gain.
Yeah.
I mean, she told us what we needed to know to continue the story.
Well, you know why I thought that, NASA nerd, is because when we first originally went to see Dune, when it was in the theaters, remember Sting and the Codpiece?
Yes.
Yeah, I had not read the book, and you gave me the story in a nutshell.
Uh-huh.
And then when the princess was there... explaining things after we came out of there. You said, well, that's a sign of bad storytelling is when you have all this overview, you have to get the audience acquainted with it.
Basically, when you have to use voiceover to explain the story, you're in trouble. Blade Runner is another good example of that.
So do you think that affected this episode?
No, because there's also good use of voiceover. Well, Grinch, where they're reading the story, basically.
Yeah.
You know, that was okay, because it was telling the story, but you're actually seeing it at the same time.
Well, I thought it was well used here. I didn't think it was an issue. So, no. I don't know. What do you think, Mad Woman?
Well, here's where this is going to get interesting, boys and girls.
Uh-oh.
I liked the episode a lot. I thought it was a good episode. I wasn't unhappy with it. And, of course, Matt Smith ripped my heart out when he regenerated. And I'm still dumped on it. But I spent a lot of the episode feeling like I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. And it never did. So, like I said, I didn't hate the episode. I did like the episode. I liked it a lot. But I wasn't as enamored with this episode as I was, say, pretty much everything from Series 5, where it all began, you know, where the love affair started. Even Series 6, which, like, 9/10 of that season was incredible. Maybe it had its faults, but there was a lot going on, a lot to digest, and a lot to care about. And then we get to Series 7, where I started to feel like there were little chinks in the armor. You know, episodes I was supposed to love, oh my god, dinosaurs on a spaceship, and this and that and the other thing. And I had this whole kind of sense of and then going on. But I still loved it. It was still great. And I was still into it. And then the 50th anniversary was completely incredible. And then Matt Smith's final episode. And then, you know, there was a heavy sense of that in this episode that it kept me from loving it instead of just really, really liking it.
Hmm.
So, I mean, we've actually had some discussions about this before now, but I'll lay out my point for the listeners, and then we can do like a point counterpoint thing, I guess, and it'll be fun and debate, and that's why Steve is here. I felt a little bit like for example, the town on Trenzalore, Christmas.
Right.
I didn't totally understand why the Doctor stayed. I mean, I kept waiting for something to really latch onto and really care about in terms of why the Doctor was so dead set to save this town, except for the fact that it was a town full of innocents and that's what the Doctor does. I mean,
isn't that enough?
Well, it was more than that, but go on.
Well, not so much, not to this degree. I mean, I kept hearing in the episode, you know, we're supposed to care about these people because the Doctor saves innocents and they're all innocent, but why? That's it's like the question was still. I felt like a 5-year-old. Why? And there was never quite an answer. Yeah, we had the little boy who desperately didn't want the Doctor to go, but he hadn't gone anywhere so far, and the TARDIS showed up, and so why all of a sudden is he terrified that the Doctor was going to leave? And then the Doctor was there fighting alongside the villagers of Christmas against the Daleks and all of the Doctor's enemies, and I got that. But why suddenly are the Silents his new best friends? And what was all this stuff with the Mother Superioress? And again, why should we care about these people beyond the fact that they're innocents and the Doctor needs to protect them? Like I said, I didn't hate it. I thought it was good for what it was, but I kept asking why, and then what's next?
Well, why did you care about Amy beyond the fact of he made her a promise to come back?
I cared about her because of where her story began with the Doctor. There was a relationship that built there. We have seen her time and again grow and develop as a character.
Yeah, but you're talking about feelings and a relationship that grew throughout the episodes. We don't have the luxury of that in this.
Well, we're talking about an individual, though. Amy Pond, we saw her grow and evolve as she traveled with the Doctor when she was left on her own. The Girl Who Waited is a prime example of what she became by herself. And that was reason enough to fall in love with this girl.
But this wasn't about the story of the little boy leaning against the TARDIS that did not want the Doctor to go. This is about his time of his winter, of this is his end.
Well, to answer your question, the bigger point was it wasn't so much just protecting that city, that village, is that if he left, all the Doctor's enemies that were in space were going to attack the planet and destroy it.
And destroy Gallifrey.
Yeah, to destroy Gallifrey, to keep it
from coming back. If it came through the crack, yeah.
So was it? So yeah, the city would be destroyed, but it was also to protect Gallifrey.
His people that he thought he had butchered.
Yeah, and now they're alive and they're trying to come through.
That's why he was going to stay.
So he had to stay.
He couldn't lose them again.
Because if he went away, the war would break up again. And, yeah. And the priestess said that.
Yeah, she said war would break out again. Yeah. And she was just as willing to burn that planet to a cinder if the Doctor brought them back.
And that's what I'm saying. That's why I didn't hate the episode. Yeah. It made sense. Mm-hmm. Stephen Moffat did all of the, I guess you could say, he dotted all his I's, he crossed all his T's. Everything was in order. This all made sense. And yet...
See, the village was secondary. But since he was staying there, he fell in love with the village and they fell in love with him. But that was ancillary to the main
point. You know, I think I can kind of understand now where Mad Woman's coming from, because you had time to learn about Amy, even in that episode, even before the Doctor left. You got the time to get attached to her. You didn't have that with this town. Yeah, it's a cute little town. Yeah, there it is. And it's one thing to present everything and all of the stakes. It's another to have the take the time to get everybody emotionally invested in it so that when the fight comes up, you're 100% behind the Doctor. Is that it?
Sort of, yeah. Like, well, let me give you an example. And this is an example of where, like, 2 seconds in an episode can take a background character and make them three-dimensional instead of a bunch of cardboard cutouts that the show keeps telling us you are supposed to care about these people. The two scientists that were drilling in the Hungry Earth and... I can't remember.
Episode Cold Blood.
Cold Blood.
Yeah.
We don't get much time with them at the very beginning, but it's enough to hook our interest. We see these people interacting. We know who they are. We see the father with his boy. Seconds here and there, and by the time the Doctor shows up, we care.
Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, I didn't. I did not really? Like that episode at first. I really didn't. I didn't get invested in the little boy until somebody had to be left behind. That's when I started caring. Because then you had the stakes, but nothing they did there in the beginning endeared me. That father was a douche, because he fried the Silurian, you know, he was killing her.
No, that was the mother.
Okay, the mother. Well, one of the parents. Yeah, the mother.
Yeah, mother.
And I didn't, you know, I felt more sorry for the Silurian.
Well, you probably were supposed to for that point, but I think that's kind of where the mix-up is. I'm like talking about the dad and the son. The mother I'm not talking about. And those two scientists, you can tell just by 30 seconds of watching them talk together that there's something there, and it's a reason. It's a thing. Okay, these two like each other. They have a good relationship. Maybe there's something else. And you do that in the span of seconds. One interaction can change everything.
Well, that's part of the thing I like about Moffat. In a couple of seconds, he can lay out a lot of information.
Exactly. And I feel like that he didn't do that with this episode. And I had one big point that I wanted to make on the air, and I haven't discussed this with either of you yet, but I think it can kind of make my point about what Moffat could have done differently in this episode.
Okay.
We've seen him before, 30 seconds, all it takes to make us care. You know, one tiny character, pull him out, give us a second, put him back, and we know why the Doctor's there. We understand it instead of just are being told, you're supposed to care, you're supposed to care. The silence. The time of the Doctor was not just a farewell to Matt Smith. It was, I feel, Moffat's chance to wrap up all the loose ends surrounding the 11th Doctor before we move on to 12.
Oh, boy, did I'll he agree ever. With
that. Yeah, like, and it was like he had a little checklist. The crack in the wall, the silence, the papal mainframe, this, that, and
the TARDIS blowing up, everything.
Yeah, you know, he ran through his little checklist, he tied up all his loose ends, and I feel like he did that and sacrificed the characters. Because Doctor Who is, a lot of it is like, you know, you care about the people, the Doctor, the companions, and the people that he meets every time he goes on one of his adventures. I mean, even if it's just a 30-second scene where it's like, this father loves his son, these two people are going to hook up, you care about these people, if only for a moment. I feel like the silence in The Time of the Doctor should not have been there the way it was. I mean, I have been going back and watching some other stuff. I think that the silence storyline was pretty much wrapped up with The Wedding of River Song.
Yeah.
We never really understood their origins. We never kind of figured out where they came from. But they were a horrific threat. They were freaking scary. Mm-hmm. And they were some of the most impressive looking monsters we've seen on Doctor Who in a long time. And I think that
was...
Yeah.
I think that was enough.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you there. I think they were pretty useless in this episode.
I think they're, I think their purpose as a faceless, nameless threat you cannot remember for some reason, I thought that was perfect.
Yes.
So, having them come back in this episode to wrap up who exactly they were and where exactly they came from, we didn't need it. And for those moments that Moffat stole to explain the silence, he could have given us a 10-second interaction in Christmas between the Doctor and, what's the little boy's name? I can't remember.
Well, you see, that's the problem with him and the little boy, him and whoever. He's there for hundreds of years. These people are going to come and go. So you can't reattach yourself to one person. The city, the village itself is a character.
But the people...
And you saw his relationship with the village itself grow.
But,
considering the village is a character, that's where he's going with it.
But that's just it. The people that he interacts with, they are the hooks that draw us into caring about this city, because the people he interacts with are produced by this city. 10 seconds with him and Barta Blake exchanging a couple of cute words could have been enough to make you care a little bit more.
They did that.
They
did with him fixing toys. I mean, he's going out to fight the wood Cybermen.
Yeah.
And what does he do? He's handing out toys he fixed.
He fixes toys. He dances with them. He eats with them. You see moments of him sharing his life with them.
You know?
It's just that it's a lot of them at the same time, which actually suits the Doctor's very fast nature in this incarnation of, you know, he's going to hit as many people as he can and help as many people as he can.
I think
just didn't see the one-on-one
this time.
I think
the difference here is you're looking at the boy as the character, and he's not. The village is the character.
The boy is an example. Like, for example, okay, here's what I think might have happened that could have made me care a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Yes, we see him after 300 years, you know, fixing toys and stuff like that. This is who he's become.
Mm-hmm.
We never saw how he got there, so it's kind of like, okay, this is who you are. Where did it start? And then. That's where the "and then" moment comes from. If the silence hadn't been there, they could have taken 5 seconds to maybe introduce the Doctor to, maybe it was one of the little boy's ancestors or something, an introduction to these characters. You know, I'm your new sheriff or whatever, and a character comes up to him and says something. A 10-second interaction there between two people could have made all the difference. And then later, you have a throwaway bit of dialogue, you know, remember the day I met your mother sort of deal. And that could have established something, a link in a chain, you know, talk to this person for a second.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts on this. Okay. It might have been shot and it ended up on the cutting room floor, because they felt like they either ran out of time or it wasn't integral to the story. Maybe Moffat thought, you do this, you're going to get distracted by, oh, why didn't we have more time with the boy? The problem with fans of Doctor Who is, no matter which way you go, they're going to pick something to death. Now, Gene and Dennis and I agree, the character was not the individuals, it was the city itself. Though, actually, I think the city kind of took away... The point was, it was Gallifrey, that he's doing this for. Because, he could have left and abandoned the town. Mm-hmm. And he leaves people, you know, here and there to die all the time. He makes these choices. But his own people, he was staying there, I think, in my mind, primarily to save them. Yeah, these other people, he has to protect them in the meantime in order to protect his people. But I really, really think, at least in my mind, on my planet... He was there for Gallifrey, therefore the town was secondary, and the individuals in it were not the point of the story. That's just me.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and I do agree with that. It's the reason I didn't hate the episode. It all made sense. I just felt like...
You have some vague discomfort about what...
The whole package was wrapped up with a nice little bow, but... The bow and the paper could have been a lot shinier, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't this glittering, gleaming present waiting to be opened with all kinds of wonderful things inside. It had a lot of wonderful things inside, but... I'd say maybe the present was a knockoff of that name-brand dolly that I wanted for Christmas, and the bow was maybe the wrong color. So little things that could have...
Maybe if they had made this an hour and a half instead, it wouldn't have killed them to make it 15 minutes or a half hour later.
Or change the spin. Like I said, I feel more like Moffat was more interested in wrapping up all of his loose ends with the 11th Doctor
I agree with you on
than he was in actually making us care. I could have lived with plot holes if I had something else to pull me further into this episode, because it's Matt Smith's final episode, so I really feel like he owed it more to the characters and less to his writing centered around the 11th Doctor. That's kind of what it felt. Maybe that's the really the focal point of it.
I was about to say something. I know what I was about to say. I think you hit on something in that when you say, you know, you usually have a character you care about that they introduce. In this case, the character was the Doctor. You're not really supposed to be focused on anybody else.
Yeah, and it is about his time.
It is about him. So you don't want to distract it with too many other characters.
It's called the time of the Doctor, not the time of Gallifrey or the time of this town he's trying to save. Or Papal Mainframe or the Silence or anything else.
This was a regeneration we've never seen before, in that we saw him go basically die of old age. So that right there is new. And we saw him basically sacrifice the end of his life to stay there to protect Gallifrey.
Actually, the first Doctor died of, they said he died of exhaustion. Yeah. Okay. And he was very old, so.
Okay, so second time.
But this is a different way of him.
Yeah.
Newer people haven't seen that. They haven't gone back to that, probably.
But it was about the Doctor. The Doctor was the one you're supposed to care about.
Yeah.
And he basically, you know, adopted the city, makes him more empathetic. That, you know, he chose to spend his time here to protect his people, but at the same time, he became this patriarch of the city.
Well, then you know what I think he should have done? Because you do have a point. It's about the Doctor.
Yeah.
And there was a Tumblr post that I'll link to in the show notes. There's this whole long diatribe of everything that Moffat did wrong, and there's a lot of Moffat hate there. I'll warn you there about that. But it crystallized a few things that I felt was wrong. Kind of like I had this nebulous sense of and it really crystallized what I wanted from the episode that I didn't get. If you're going to make it about the Doctor, the points in the episode that really got to me were the moments with Clara after she showed up with the TARDIS, looking over his city in those few rays of daylight.
Yes.
And this post kind of hates on the end of Handles, which I kind of don't agree with, because I like what Moffat did with Handles.
I like that. I like that.
He made him just enough of a character that when he died, I went, oh.
His companion for, like, at least 600 years.
Yeah, and I got that. And so when Handles went kaput, I had a hand on the chest moment, trying to keep my feels in.
Yeah.
And this post, they didn't like that. But he should have had more moments with that. Instead of trying to wrap up all of his storylines, he should have maybe had a moment where, instead of explaining the silence, the Doctor sits next to the crack, maybe talks to the Time Lords. Maybe extend that final scene with Clara a little bit more. They pull the Christmas cracker. Maybe they talk a little bit about the poem. There should have been more moments with the Doctor's character and less with wrapping up the crack and wrapping up the silence and wrapping up the Papal Mainframe and wrapping up the Church of the Silence.
But you know what? Those wrap-ups were just quick, quick bits of dialogue. They weren't really entire scenes that took up like 5 or 10 minutes.
Well, let me ask this. Like more time talking about the poem or whatever. Is that people just wanting more time on that, or is it really a problem, a story problem? Because if you give more time on that, then you're also slowing down the pace.
Yeah.
So you have to have a balance. So I can understand where you want more time in a particular scene, but is it really necessary story-wise?
Well, I'm not even talking about lengthy scenes. I'm talking about seconds, moments is all we need. And like I said, the silence was the one thing that really bugged me. If they had taken that out, you'd have had a moment here, a moment there.
It seemed awkward they were in there.
Well, exactly.
They were just thrown in there, and I didn't like that. I did have a problem with that.
I agree, because done without the silence, and that the last people he was fighting with was the soldiers, then that'd be fine.
Yeah.
But he put the silence in, that's fine. He gave you a little different perspective on them. Like, they're priests. Like, okay, that's kind of weird, but all right, I'll take
that. It's like, oh, yeah, whatever.
And it is weird that his enemy now becomes his ally at the end.
Exactly.
Well, it's not unusual, but yeah.
It's not unusual, but it's a twist.
It's a twist.
Yeah, so yeah. If you took the silence out completely, and like I said, this is one problem I had, and this is my kind of alternate reality for the time of the Doctor. If you remove the silence, you can steal a few more moments with Clara and maybe learn more about the Mother Superioress. I did kind of like her. You could have the Doctor fighting with the soldiers at the end and maybe throw in an extra death scene into that montage, and we could care a little bit more that the Church of the Papal Mainframe became the Church of the Silence, and they're fighting side by side, not just to save the world, but to save the Time Lords. At least that could be what the Doctor's perspective is. And we could have been, if you took this one problematic thing out, which is just like Moffat trying to explain everything at the very, very end, you could have been drawn a little bit more into the rest of the story. It's like a hose that's been kinked up. You know, if you hold all that force back and then you let it go, the water spray is like, but if you poke holes in the hose, then all the water just kind of dribbles out and there's nothing. Moffat, had he invested less energy in the silence, more in everything else, maybe it wouldn't have felt so and-then-y.
Well, I don't think he really spent that much time on the silence. And to take the silence out, again, I could go with or without them, I don't think you gain enough time to really develop anything else.
Well, there is that.
But it was.
When you're working in so short a time frame, you have to have a really fast pace. Again, if he'd had more time, he could have slowed the pace down and included more, done a better job of editing. That's just kind of the way it is with TV.
Yeah, but it's like, it's moments and dialogue, and Moffat is known for really great dialogue and really great moments.
May I say, I love the speech at the end where he was saying that we are all different people at different times in our lives.
That was great.
I thought that was beautiful.
That really was.
Yeah, I will not forget a line of this, I swear. I will always remember when the doctor was me.
Yes.
That's got to fit on a ribbon somehow.
Yeah.
Someone will make a great big ribbon, you know, it's like... Yeah. You know, 6 inches by 6 inches of that entire line.
But that was beautiful. That was like, why he's my writing guru.
Yeah.
Moffat is.
Like I said, I have no problem with Moffat. I don't hate Moffat. I don't even dislike the episode. I liked the episode a lot. I just really, as Matt Smith's last episode, I really wanted to love it. I wanted it to be my favorite
episode ever. But that's
fair.
Yeah.
And so that's why I have so much to say and why I'm so wordy about all this.
It's understandable.
And I will say that for what I felt was lacking in the writing, not a single performance suffered. Everybody was fantastic. Everybody was flawless. I love Clara so much. And just the Matt Smith's performance as the Doctor in this episode, I died. I just, losing him as the Doctor, it hurts. I mean, I've been going on and on. Like, my Doctor's leaving, I can't take it. But watching him go and knowing that era is, a little piece of my life is gone.
Yeah.
And that he, you know, Matt Smith's still there. He's got movies he's doing. He's got things he's doing.
Hopefully with hair this time. Yep. I hated how he looked with that ball cap. It was horrible.
Oh, God.
Well, Time Siren and I saw Fireplace Gale go through this when Matt Smith came on.
Yeah.
And then Tennant ended.
Yeah. And yeah, boy, those Tennant fans are out of their minds. They go like one step too far, but that's normal, you know, what you went through,
I did see Tennant go too, but I love Matt Smith too, so.
Yeah. You know, I'm excited to see who Capaldi's going to be. Who is Capaldi? Yeah. Who is the 12th Doctor? That's going to be exciting.
So just how he started, you can see there's some craziness I wasn't expecting, so.
Yeah. I gotta tell you though, I have not been that thrilled with Clara this entire season. I think the best thing she did was Asylum of the Daleks, and went downhill. Well, not downhill from there. It never picked up. It was exactly the same through the rest of the series. I didn't care, you know, a hill of beans for. But this episode, finally at the end, made me care. And that was good. That really was good that happened. And I have to give a shout out to you, NASA Nerd. You absolutely called it. And he's laughing because I've been praising him ever since. He said a year ago that when we talked about where the new regeneration is going to come from, he said, you know, it could be the Time Lords. And he's the only one I heard say that. Everyone else...
Well, I fear any new regenerations would have to come from the Time Lords, because we know from the old series that they can transfer the regenerations one to another.
They can give you a whole
and
set
in the
of regenerations.
Movie with
the movie...
The Eighth Doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Gann. That's what the Master was trying to do, get his more regenerations from the Doctor.
Yeah.
So it's very well established.
Yeah, it is. Something in all of these discussions that we've had, and they've been pretty intense, I got to tell you, from this, you know, from the second that episode ended, Time of the Doctor ended, all these discussions made me realize something, especially when I started reading crazy blog posts out there about the misogyny or whatever everybody's accusing Moffat of, is that you look at an episode and you criticize it exactly in the way of what you are or what you are not. You see in it a reflection of what, you know, you would put in it yourself or not put in it. You don't judge, nobody judges it objectively. I don't care who you are.
Well, everybody looks through things through their own filter.
Yeah. So when somebody is out there saying this, that, and the other, and it's such an extreme point of view, I think the more vehement they are about it, the more they have issues. And they should, you know, try and learn something out of it, because storytelling is supposed to get us to think, and it's supposed to explain the world around us and our own world. So yeah. It's interesting. From people's opinions, you can tell a lot about what they are inside.
Well, also, sometimes the minority is the loudest speaking people. Yeah, like one person that has a totally different view, but he's so loud, he drowns out everybody else.
Yeah, he's got bigger issues than everybody else in the room.
And you think lots of people think that way, and it's not really true.
No, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes down to it, whether Doctor Who is good writing or not comes down to one thing, ratings. If the ratings are plummeting, then it's really not a good show overall.
Yeah.
But so far, they just broke the world's record for live viewings with the 50th anniversary all around the world.
There's no doubt of that.
And as far as Moffat's misogyny goes, I will say this, and it's a very specific point, and then I'll be done with the issue, because I don't really agree with it. I'm a massive Tumblr user. There's been a lot of discussion that I've seen on Tumblr about the kiss with the Mother Superiors. I cannot remember her name to save my freaking life.
It's something like Tam or
Tasha Rel.
Tosh,
yeah. He kisses her without her permission. And a lot of people have gone on and on about that. Two things. First of all, after that, she kind of got back at him a little bit. She was still kind of static. Never kiss me again without my permission. So she gave as good as she got. She asserted herself. Yes. So I don't think there's anything misogynistic or forced about that, except for the fact that he grabbed her and kissed her. These same people are probably the ones who are on Tumblr. And there's an iconic image from, I think, the end of World War II, where a sailor's kissing a nurse or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that was in Life magazine or something. Yeah.
There are people on Tumblr, there's a picture of this that's gone around with comments from people who are like, you know, this is an example of rape culture or something like that, because he's kissing her without her permission. And then other people are going, what is wrong with you? It was a heat of the moment thing. It's a moment of celebration
and
joy.
Thing,
yeah, and you know what? Say what you will about minorities and how careful our culture is about certain things these days. And I, you know, I'm wholeheartedly feminist. I, you know, down with the patriarchy and that sort of thing. But a lot of stuff like that one example of the World War II photograph, these are devices in storytelling.
Yes.
There is a certain timelessness about gestures like that. So the forced kiss with the Mother Superioress, A, she asserted herself, and B, it was a heat-of-the-moment thing. He was happy. He was celebrating. So it can be not excused, but forgiven. There's nothing wrong with it, basically.
Well, they had a relationship prior. So all I can say to these people that are yelling about a rape culture is get over yourselves and go get therapy. Because you really are messed up.
I was going to say the same thing. It's like, they knew each other before this episode.
Yeah.
And then they knew each other for 300 years. She was the one that's getting him his marshmallows.
Yeah.
Yeah, so really forced?
Yeah, there's a pre-existing relationship. So
give me a break.
Yeah, there's no
so it's
force.
Not, it wasn't like, you don't kiss me. It's like, don't kiss me without my permission.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing.
Yeah, it's almost like she was doing that because she has an image to uphold.
Besides, when they walked into her chamber the first time, remember, this altar looks like a bed. This bed looked like an altar. Mm-hmm. There's flirtation going on there.
Yeah.
Well, the thing, too, was that is the fact that she was asserting herself, she was setting a boundary, which, to me, makes it, you know,
that's
better.
Right, yeah.
It wasn't a case of, a lot of people have complained, too, about, you know, the super sexy femme fatale thing that Moffat throws around a lot. And it wasn't a case of he forced kissed her and she's like, oh, doctor. It was a case of he forced kissed her, never kiss me again without my permission. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of smiling and laughing when she said it, but she still said it. So, message served.
Yeah.
You know, it's not okay to kiss somebody without their permission. She warned him off.
I wonder if these people, I wonder if these same people were screaming about River kissing the doctor. Because she freaking killed him with that kiss.
Okay, let's say.
Seriously?
Let's say you're here, or let's say we're at a Worldcon, and I suddenly win the Hugo, and I just kiss Chris, and I turn around and kiss you.
Yeah.
Are you going to slap me or something?
Yeah, number one, Mad Woman's not going to slap you. Number two, I'm not going to slap either of you, because we've had our therapy, and we are good with who we are. It does not threaten us.
Yeah.
So I think these people that are screaming about this, really, they feel some kind of threat. And again, go get therapy. You people are messed up. Please don't breathe.
Yeah, Mad Woman, your example of the Life magazine where the sailor kisses the girl who's a stranger. It was mentioned. That's exactly the same thing.
Exactly. It was a heated moment thing. It was a celebration. It was not a case of forcing himself on this other woman.
So that isn't a boyfriend-girlfriend kind of thing, or a husband-wife, and the husband comes over from the war, is that?
No, they were marching in a parade, and the sailor just grabbed this woman that was on the sidelines and kissed her. And it made the cover of Life magazine.
And you know what? I actually think that's beautiful.
It was just a celebration that the war is over and he's home.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a picture of
I would have gladly given that kiss because he was willing to give his life for his country. So come on. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's the same as in a TV show. If you want to address like safe sex stuff, all you have to do is, you know, have a love scene going on and somebody asks, do you have protection? Message served. That's it. Yeah. And they did this thing that there was nothing wrong with, but then I you know, maybe to placate the naysayers, they had her never kiss me again without permission. Message served. That's it. It's over and done.
It was part of her character. She had to be the strong person, which is a leader.
But it serves that dual purpose of silencing the naysayers. Yeah. You know, yes, you kissed her without her permission. Never kiss me again. You're done. That's it.
Well, most normal people would be done. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a neat little bow. That's a good example of Moffat and his badass storytelling. Yeah.
Overall,
you have to warp that. Sorry.
I think we can let that
overall, slip. It's not an issue to me.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people waste their time and their energy and their blogging and picking this stuff apart and just making the whole world sit there and go, wow, you really don't have anything else useful to do in your life, do you? It's, you know, it's like, come on.
So are we finished nitpicking about something that's nitpicky?
I don't know. You got any more nits to pick, Madeline?
I have no more nits to pick. I only have more praise to heap upon the Moth.
Yes.
Because, I love Clara. I will always love Clara. She's been awesome. And I've cared about her since the beginning. But this episode just cinched a lot of reasons why I care about her.
It did. And she's always been clever, but you really got into her character at this point.
And for the record, I loved that she comes in and goes, "You're naked!" And the doctor goes, "Yes, I am!"
He was so proud!
It was adorable. I mean, come on. When Tennant was naked, nobody complained. Why are they complaining about Matt Smith?
That's right.
Yeah, see,
they're both hot.
Yeah, this is the other thing that happened to me because of this episode. I couldn't let go, so I kept surfing the net for pictures and clips and GIFs and stuff. And now I've turned into a Clara and 11th Doctor shipper. It's like, I'm definitely getting maybe a lighter, more playful Dr. Rose vibe with the two of them. Because,
you know, it was only a matter of time.
Well, and the thing, too, is that they made a point of showcasing the fact that Clara remembers her time in the Doctor's time stream. Because she was, you know, unfazed by the idea of him regenerating. I know, you don't die, you just change. Mm-hmm. So she was okay with it. She remembers.
Yeah.
And so there's something that's been building over the course of the Doctor's entire lifetime. A lot of flirting, a lot of chemistry, and he cares about her passionately because she's his impossible girl.
Yeah.
He risked life and limb to get her back because she's been there. She's always been there. And that's been fixed, and, you know, but still, they have something that's been built across the span of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And so You see it, too, in the fact that with River and with Amy and other stuff in Eleven's tenure, you'll see him flip out at the idea that he's going to get romantically involved with somebody, or Amy's kissing him in her bedroom, is this going to ever work?
Yes.
And River's kissing him, and he's like, right, didn't see that coming, and scratching his face all upset.
I used to love that little scratching face.
And then Clara goes, "You're my boyfriend," and he's all, "Okay, ding dong, maybe I've been rusty in some areas, but I'll scan a manual."
He's so great. Okay
with it. It's like, he totally loves her, okay?
he's grown and evolved, and you know, but I do want to throw in there, I'll give people that they're picking this episode apart to death, and I don't understand why they're not doing that with the 50th, but, you know, maybe it just glowed more. But, after that first epic, wonderful 5th season, that started with the 11th Hour, which is my favorite season, I've been less and less enamored of Moffat, and I think it's just natural, and I'm sad it's happening. I've only been able to find jewels in it where before I liked the entire season beginning to end. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe I'll save it for another lengthy debate on the episode, but I discussed with Nassner briefly some of what I think is wrong, but like I said, it's a lengthier discussion for another time. Yeah. Let's go back to squeeing more about this episode.
All right.
And sobbing because Matt is gone and he's not there anymore.
Okay, you better watch it or I'm going to have Steve the Silent wipe your memory of the whole doctor business. Mm-hmm. You better calm down.
No, you can't take 11 from me.
No, I'm just kidding.
Thank you.
I probably couldn't. Don't, it would be a crime against nature.
Don't
but.
Scare me like that. But anywho, yeah, so I love Clara. I did enjoy what we saw of the town of Christmas and its residents. And another reason why, you know, I think Moffat could have done more. That cute little exchange at the beginning with that husband and wife. And,
yes.
You know, troublesome living in a village with a truth field? No, yes!
That was cute, yeah.
Yeah, it's adorable. There was potential there.
That was another brilliant thing. I think Moffat did, and it was very hard for him to do, I would think, as a writer, to set up a town where nobody can lie,
yeah,
and then continue that through the entire story. I think the best example of that was with the wooden Cybermen. Because he points his scrum shrew writer and says, I've sent you your gun phaser, whatever, a signal to reverse the polarity shooting thing and all that. And you can check my sonic screwdriver to see if I really did that. And then turns out he did. And the Cyberman turns it around and shoots himself. He goes, oh, I forgot to mention, it doesn't work on wood.
Exactly.
So he didn't lie at all.
Well, yeah. You know, actually, I just found an error in that.
What?
The internal parts of the Cyberman were not wood. The internal parts were still mechanical.
Some of them had to be, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that was an error on Moffat's part, but I'm willing to let it slip because the whole setup of the scene, you just go with it and you don't think about it until later.
Exactly.
When us Doctor Who fans pick the bloody thing to death.
There you go.
But the brilliant thing was he did it without lying.
Yeah, because the Doctor is supposed to be a clever son of a gun like that.
He just omitted some information.
Yeah.
Which is not lying.
Yeah. Actually, this has convinced me that Moffat listens to the big finishes because there's one called Prisoner of the Sun. It's an Eighth Doctor story. The Doctor stays for hundreds of years in the heart of a sun to keep it from blowing up and destroying a planet. And he had never met any of the residents. So he had even less incentive to stay in a situation for a very long time, even by his accounts, a long time, to save a people. So, he listens to him.
I'm sure he does. And that's another thing I like about Moffat is that he's a fan of the show. And as a fan, he knows his history. Because there's one point where Harry asked Handels to decipher something that the Time Lords had sent him, the message. And he goes, the Seal of Rathlum. I nicked it from the Master
in the Death Zone,
which is directly from the Five Doctors.
Which is the
25th anniversary episode of the show.
That was nice.
Yeah.
That was nice. In fact, you know what? That was the only beef I had about the 50th anniversary.
What?
Is that the fan porn at the end was going over the top. Standing in the row with all the Doctors, I was like, okay, the episode ended a few minutes before this because this is just fan porn.
It is. But that was fine. I didn't mind it.
It still tore my heart out of my chest and handed it to me.
Well, supposed to.
Because, in the sense, you know that's not real.
Because it was your doctor doing that.
There.
None of the other doctors got that.
Yeah.
Chance to do that,
but
so.
It's about how it made you feel. And that's the important thing. Maybe it was gratuitous. Maybe you don't care because you feel the way you want to feel. The 50th anniversary is supposed to, like, reach into your chest and Once Upon a Time story style, just rip your heart out and just put it in your hand.
Well, that was a photo op to get all of the 11th Doctor in there. And that was fine.
You know what ripped me, actually, my heart out about this regeneration was how quickly he changed from 11 to Capaldi. It was absolutely a blink of an eye.
It was wild.
I was kind of like, but what? I mean, I know there was just this enormous regeneration, but wait a minute, he's still here, but wait a minute, he's gone?
That's one of those little, like, WTF moments that my brain was able to assimilate and compensate for, because he regenerated up there, but he's got a new set of regeneration, so the reset button is being hit. He doesn't just go from one to another. He's got to start his cycle over again, so he resets to his original age, gives us a chance to say goodbye, and then after the, you know, de-aging process takes place, then boom, new Doctor shows up.
And he sneezes and boom, there he is.
Exactly.
And you're like, what just happened?
Well, that was fine. I bought the thing, the whole reset thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it set up a gratuitous moment for us to say goodbye.
Never been done, yeah. So he could set the precedence for it.
I love the part with Amy coming back.
Oh my god! That
heart stopping. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I've heard online people say that he didn't get enough time with Clara, and the shippers are upset about that, and all this other stuff. But it fit. He started with Amy. He ended with Amy.
Yes.
And the one defining characteristic about Eleven's reign as the Doctor, you know, 10 was kind of like this messianic character. 9 was the you know, PTSD guy from the Time War. 11's story was that of a fairy tale. He was the imaginary friend of Amy growing up. And for Clara, it was more a case of, you know, 11 was the hero, and then Clara became his hero. She was the one that saved him.
Mm-hmm.
And she was this mystery he couldn't figure out. It kind of became the Doctor's fairy tale, this impossible girl. So that's the defining quality of 11's tenure, is the fairy tale. So it started with Amy, it ended with Amy, even if it was just in the Doctor's own mind, you know. It started with the Raggedy Doctor.
I bought that.
And it ended with...
I totally bought that. He's in freaking hallucination. I mean, you can see anything.
And the pulling off of the tie.
Yeah. Oh, God, when he pulled off that bow tie, I'm getting kind of a clump just thinking about it. Talk amongst yourself. No, when he pulled off that bow tie, it gutted me. Because I've been saying it all along. The new Doctor, what if he doesn't like fish fingers and custard? What if bow ties are no longer cool?
Have his own
that was the other thing—the fish fingers and coasters on the council.
When Clara walked in. It took everything that gave me massive emotions and flung it at me. And so at the end, I'm actually getting a little teary. I'm being choked up too. And then he ended with that line. And then at the end, Matt broke the fourth wall, looked right into the camera, and he said, "I will always remember when the Doctor was me." And that
it was like a time crash when he looks at the. Pierre Davis's Doctor and says, "You were my Doctor."
Yeah.
That's Moffat ripping out our heart and stomping
it. Yeah, and Matt, he turned to the camera and he said goodbye, and it's just,
Well, no, we're gonna have to end here because she's weepy. And...
I get emotional just talking because Matt's my Doctor. He's why I care about this so passionately. He's why I went back to look at the older Doctors and develop a certain fondness for 3. He's why I
started... 3 is cool. And I think Capaldi's going to have some of that.
He is very much... This is like resetting back to the third Doctor.
It's going to maybe it's good that I like John Pertwee then because, you know, I'm... Like I said, 50th anniversary, that look in his eyes, I want to know who the heck 12 is.
Yeah.
I can't wait to find out who he is. No matter how much I miss Matt, no matter how gutted I am right now, and always will be, that my Doctor's not here anymore, I can't wait to meet 12.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it.
He's very wide-eyed, and he's awesome. Already, he's awesome.
Yeah, we literally got a minute with him.
But we have to wait to August! Moffat, I hate you.
Well,
that's more BBC, I hate you.
Okay, BBC, I hate you too.
Well, and see, I actually have an idea about that. Since Steve's in the room, I'm going to forget this if I don't write it down. So, okay, here's the Corsair's big whiteboard that I'm going to wheel in right here. Yes, she has a whiteboard in the control room. I asked her to put it here. Okay.
The talk dose was getting everywhere.
Good idea.
Okay, here, going to write the big note here so we don't forget once Steve leaves. Doctor Who retrospective. We just lost Matt Smith. And we have, as you can see here, we have so much to say about his tenure as Doctor and other Doctors, you know, compare and contrast. I think that until August, we need to do a countdown. We need to start with Matt, you know, kind of a eulogy to 11, say goodbye to Matt Smith's tenure as Doctor, and then maybe count backwards from 11, 10, 9, 8, until 1, then maybe do the companions, do the monsters, and we can not only discuss their reign as Doctors and whatever, but... I think it would also be really interesting to discuss the ins and outs of cosplaying these characters.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, tie it in nicely. With...
Yeah, the femme doctors, AU doctors, like steampunky things or whatever. Crossover stuff, like, can we discuss the Gallifrey, the 2 costumes I saw, this was past year, that were perfect. The Weeping Angel in the Outfield and the Ood Abides from the Big Lebowski. These are the things we need to discuss. And I think until August, we need to sit down and...
Or the Sailor Moon TARDIS.
Yes, Sailor TARDIS.
Yes.
Yes. These are the things that we need to discuss until then. So we've got on the whiteboard now. We won't forget when Steve's gone. So, and we can take out the iDrives. So,
yeah. And by the way, can we please get him out of here? He creeps me out!
Okay. Steve, can you kindly walk out of the room and then we'll just take our iDrives out?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And again, I'll meet you Thursday for our bingo game. Good. Okay.
How are you going to remember that?
Good question.
Right on your arm, next to all those slash marks.
Oh, there we go. Wait, slash marks? Steve, I didn't tell you you could bring friends.
Oh, no. Don't look at the ceiling. The Corsairs would like to thank and apologize to the following people, TV shows, and lay waste to the reputations of all those involved I can't remember. What was I going to say? Ah! What the hell is that? This has been, was, or will be a Krypton Radio production. Please visit www.corsairs-closet.com. For prior episodes, links to our social networks, show notes, and email addresses, we would really love to hear from you. And if you have any raid, please send it to us. Care of the TARDIS.